Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jnanatimirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuranmiritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Before we begin with the verse, I want to speak a few words about Vrindavan Das Thakur. Today is his disappearance day. Vrindavan Das Thakur is the author of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj, many times he mentions Vrindavan Das Thakur, expressing appreciation for the Chaitanya Mangal, he calls it, was later called Chaitanya Bhagavat. He calls Vrindavan Das Thakur the Vyasadev of Lord Chaitanya's childhood pastimes, or Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in general. So he's considered, Vrindavan Das Thakur is, because of that, he's considered to be an incarnation of Srila Vyasadeva. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur, in many places, he describes some pastime of Lord Chaitanya. Then he says, Lord Chaitanya performed unlimited pastimes at every moment. And he said it's not possible to really delineate them or explain them in full. But he says, in the future, Vyasadeva will elaborate on all these pastimes. So it's an interesting thing for him to say, since he is Vyasadeva. And so he's predicting that in the future, there will be another Chaitanya Bhagavat. I read somewhere recently that one reason that the name was changed to from Chaitanya Mangal to Chaitanya Bhagavat, not only because there was another book called Chaitanya Mangal, but because this is the Bhagavatam of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just like Srimad Bhagavatam is the Bhagavatam of Krishna, so Chaitanya Bhagavat, according to the great devotees in Lord Chaitanya's line, they recognize that this is like the Bhagavatam written by Vyasadeva. This is the Bhagavatam written for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So of course, Vrindavan Das Thakur, he worked from the notes of Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta's diary. Murari Gupta kept the diary of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And Vrindavan Das Thakur was working from that. For the first time, I actually started reading this, what is called Murari Gupta's diary, or notes. We often hear it referred to as notes. But if you look at this, it's a polished work of literature. It's not just some scribbled notes that you might put in your journal or diary. It's actually written in, you know, proper Sanskrit or Bengali or both, glorifying the pastime. So it's like Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavat in many ways in that respect. So it's quite, even Murari Gupta, what Vrindavan Das Thakur was working from, that was already a polished piece of work. Vrindavan Das Thakur, of course, he was the son of Narayani. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur mentions his mother. His mother was the niece of Srivas Thakur. So there were these four brothers. And she was the daughter of one of the brothers of Srivas Thakur. Lord Chaitanya, actually if you read Chaitanya Bhagavat, you'll see Lord Chaitanya glorifies Srivas Thakur and his family like anything. He says anybody, even a servant. There was this one servant, Duki, and then he changed her name to Suki. And there was a tailor connected to his family, and he got prema. So Narayani also, she was just a little girl, and she got the Mahaprasad of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and she instantly got prema and exhibiting ecstatic symptoms. So this was something that was part of the legend, you might say, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that people would talk about. this person, Narayani, she was just a little girl, and she got prema by taking Lord Chaitanya's Mahaprasad. So from the womb of this Narayani came Vrindavan Das Thakur. So that's his pedigree. That's where he's coming from. Such an auspicious birth he had. So we're eternally indebted to him for giving us this Chaitanya Bhagavat, a wonderful literature describing in quite detail. Actually, in Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially in the earlier, in the Adi Leela, where we hear about the different branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree, actually all the Panchatattva, the different branches of their trees, which means their disciplic descendants. So in many of the purports there, because Vrindavan Das Thakur, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he essentially gives a list. He doesn't say much, maybe a word or two, about the different devotees. But Srila Prabhupada often expands on these devotees in his purports, and mostly he's drawing from Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat. You'll see that. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, it is said such and such. He explains the pastime in more detail. Because especially the devotees in Navadvip, who were connected to Lord Chaitanya's Kumara Leela and his Poganda Leela, Kaishur Leela, his early Leelas before he took sannyas, then these devotees, they're described, they're more about them and more of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes with them are described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So Prabhupada draws from that to give us information in his purports to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So now we'll go on to the verse. Today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, which is entitled Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. We're in the midst of this multi-chapter pastime of Lord Vamanadev. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu has noted at times that Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the questions that the sages at Naimisharanya asked, they wanted to hear about the pastimes of the Lord. So he has noted that there's at least one chapter devoted to 30 different avatars of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So some of them get multiple chapters. So Vamanadev is one of those. By the way, I don't know if it's mentioned has been mentioned, but among the different kinds of avatars that Lord Chaitanya explained, different categories of avatars, one of those is a Manvantar avatar. Now, Srila Prabhupada sometimes refers to the Manu himself as the Manvantar avatar. But strictly speaking, in each Manvantar, there's an incarnation of the Lord. Just like in each Yuga, there's a Yuga avatar. So in each Manvantar, which is the period ruled over by one Manu, there's also an avatar. And the Manu, he's able to consult and get guidance from the Manvantar avatar. So the Manvantar avatar, for the Manvantar that we're in right now, Vaivaswata Manu, is Lord Vamanadev. So he's currently presiding over this Manvantar. And Vaivaswata Manu can ask him questions if he wants some guidance. So we'll chant the verse. Please repeat. Sri Baliruvacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam Grihamedinam Artam Kamam Yashovrittim Yono Badeta Karyachit Sri Baliruvacha. Bali Maharaj said, Satyam, it is truth. Bhagavata, by your greatness. Proktam, what has already been spoken. Dharma, a religious principle. Ayam, that is. Grihamedinam, especially for the householders. Artam, economic development. Kamam, sense gratification. Yashaha vrittim, reputation and means of livelihood. Yaha, Which religious principle? Na, not. Badheta hinders. Karhichit at any time. Translation. Bali Maharaj said, as you have already stated, the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame, and means of livelihood is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this religious principle is correct. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Bali Maharaj's grave answer to Shukracharya is meaningful. Shukracharya stressed that one's material means of livelihood and one's material reputation, sense gratification, and economic development must continue properly. To see to this is the first duty of a man who is a householder, especially one who is interested in material affairs. If a religious principle does not affect one's material condition, it is to be accepted. At the present time in this age of Kali, this idea is extremely prominent. No one is prepared to accept any religious principle if it hampers material prosperity. Shukracharya, being a person of this material world, did not know the principles of a devotee. A devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his full satisfaction. Anything that hampers such determination should certainly be rejected. This is the principle of bhakti. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 22.100. To perform devotional service, one must accept only that which is favorable and reject that which is unfavorable. Bali Maharaj had the opportunity to contribute everything he possessed to the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva. But Shukracharya was putting forward a material argument to hamper this process of devotional service. Under the circumstances, Bali Maharaj decided that such hindrances should certainly be avoided. In other words, he decided immediately to reject the advice of Shukracharya and go on with his duty. Thus he gave all his possessions to Lord Vamanadeva. Bali Maharaj is, of course, one of the Mahajans. Srila Prabhupada in some places says, because he rejected his spiritual master, therefore he is Mahajan. Because he set an example, which is quite extreme. I know the purport, the last purport, was about this idea, rejecting one's guru. It's not something that's to be done lightly. But Bali Maharaj is noted for this. Of course, he's also noted for Sarva Swatmani Vedane. In the book Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Rupa Goswami has listed the nine processes of devotional service and the devotee who is the emblem of each one of them, who attained perfection by each one. Each devotee is aligned with one process of devotional service. So Bali Maharaj, Sarva Swatmani Vedane, Bali Rabut, Krishnati Resham Para. So Bali Maharaj is the emblem of surrendering everything to the Lord. Now this verse is quite interesting. Srila Prabhupada, he said, basically Prabhupada explains what's happening in the purport, because when you first read the verse, you see that Bali Maharaj is agreeing with what Shukracharya has said. He's saying that, yes, you're right, we shouldn't perform activities if they go against dharma. It's stated, there's one Vedic injunction that Srila Prabhupada quotes, Atmanam sarvato rakshet tato dharmam tato dhanam. Now the context of where Prabhupada quotes it, at least in one place, when the demigods went to Dadyantya, or the Diti, to ask him for his body, because they were advised that if you get the bones from the Diti's body, then you can make a weapon by which you can destroy Vritrasura. And there... is all in relationship to the Narayana Kavacha also. But in any case, when they went to ask the Jantra or the Diti for his body, first he rejected it. He says, everybody is so attached to their body, they'll give up all their material possessions to take care of their body. Even if Lord Vishnu asks for someone's body, they won't give it. So in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada quotes this Vedic injunction about Atmanam Sarvato Rakshet. One should always protect one's body. There the word Atma means body. So Atmanam Sarvato means always and everywhere. Rakshet. Rakshet, this Rakshet means the imperative. You must. So you must protect the body. And then, why? Why do you want to protect it? Tato dharmam, tato dhanam. Because with your body you can perform dharma. If you don't have a body, then you can't perform religious principles. Like the demigods in the higher planets, they want a body in Bharatvarsha so they can perform special religious principles in the age of Kali. So you can perform your dharma and you can also get possessions, tato dhanam. So you protect your body, then you're protecting your dharma and you're protecting your possessions. So generally we want to protect the body, to protect our religious principles. So this is the idea here. Bali Maharaj or Shukracharya has said, don't do this because you won't be able to execute your religious principles. And Bali Maharaj is agreeing to it. Now Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the purport why he's agreeing to it. Because Bali Maharaj is saying, yes, I have to protect my religious principles, but what I think of as religion and what you think of religion is two different things. We know, of course, that dharma can be translated in different ways. So there's Sanatan Dharma, then there's Griha Dharma, there's so many dharmas. Dharma means occupation. Prabhupada translates it, occupational duty. Even in the verse, Savai Pung Samparo Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Hokshaje, he translates it there as occupational duty. So your occupation is your dharma, Varnashram Dharma. But the highest dharma is, of course, Krishna consciousness, the Sanatana Dharma, the eternal dharma of the soul. So Bali Maharaj is agreeing because he's saying, yes, I have to protect my dharma. And my dharma is to give everything to Bali Maharaj, Vamanadeva. So when in the as Bali Maharaj summarizes here what Shukracharya has said, he essentially talks about what his understanding of dharma is, what Bali Maharaj's understanding of dharma is. So the words here are dharmo yam griham edinam. First, something about this word griham edinam. Now, actually, the word, now Prabhupada makes a distinction in quite a few places, actually. We know he makes a distinction between Grihamedi and Grihastha. But oftentimes the word Grihamedi isn't used in a pejorative way, in a bad way, disapproving way. It has a neutral connotation also. A Grihastha can also be called a Grihamedi, although Prabhupada doesn't generally use it that way. A similar word is Grihavrata. Grihavrata means one who has taken a Grihastha vow, literally is what it means. So that can also be neutral, or it can be taken in a bad way. Like Daksha, when he had his conflict with Narada Muni, when Narada Muni kept delivering all his sons, Daksha had the service of creating population, and he created these sons, produced these sons, and Narada Muni kept having him take sannyas. So there, Daksha, he proudly says, I'm a Grihavrati. I'm doing things the right way. I'm following the vows of Grihastha. But Prabhupada also, and Prahlad Maharaj also, he says, what is that? Matirna Krishne Paratasvatova Mitobi Padyeta Grihavratanam. He criticizes the Grihavratas. They'll never become Krishna conscious. Even if they get help from others, they'll never become Krishna conscious. Because Punak Punas Charvita Charvananam, because they're chewing the chew. They're just involved in the same karmic activities over and over and over again. So here, this word Griha Medinam, this is, Prabhupada says in the purport, that especially this ordinary dharma is for the Grihastas. One thing we often find in Srimad Bhagavatam is as soon as a speaker begins, just like Shukadeva especially, he begins speaking at the beginning of the second canto. And what is the first thing he does? He criticizes the Grihamedis, basically. He criticizes the ordinary people, which is usually most people are married. And what are they absorbed in? Family life and sense gratification in family life. So he criticizes that, even though it's authorized in the Vedic literature. If you follow Karmakanda, okay, you can enjoy sense gratification. So anyway, in this list here, so it says, dharma oyam grihamedinam artam kamam yasho vrittim. So these are the things that are mentioned in relationship to dharma. So first of all is artam. So we know, we usually have this list, the trivarga, they usually call dharma, artha, kama. The fourth, of course, is moksha. Then the fifth is prema, prema pumarto maham. So this word artha is very important. It comes up many places in our books. Now in this list of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, Prabhupada almost invariably translates it as economic development or getting money, wealth. But in a broader sense, if you look up Sanskrit words in a dictionary, often you'll see there's lots of different words, lots of different meanings, and often their meanings are close to each other. Sometimes they don't even seem close. If you read the 64 Lord Chaitanya's explorations of the Atmarama verse, sometimes you see one word can mean a lot of things that aren't even the same. But in any case, oftentimes they're connected. So the general meaning of artha is purpose or meaning. And especially artha dham means meaning, or that which gives meaning, or that which fulfills one's purpose. So if your dharma is if you're performing your dharma especially because you want kama, because you want sense gratification, then your purpose is artha money. You want some money so you can get your kama, satisfy your senses. But artha, in another sense, means the purpose of human life. Komaram acharit pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. What is it? Durlabham manushyam. Manushyam artam. Artadam. Manushyam janma artadam. Tadapi adruvam artadam. This is Prahlad Maharaj's first instruction to his classmates. He says that even though you're young boys, you should become Krishna conscious because you have this human body that you don't, it's extremely rare to get it. Sudurlabham. There's another verse in the 11th canto. It says practically the same thing. This body is temporary, adruvam, but it's artadam. It has value because you can get something valuable with it, even though it's not going to last a long time. In the 11th canto, this verse spoken by the Avaduta Brahmana, labdva sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavante manusyam artadam nityam api adhira. So that shloka, there again we see this body is anitya. So it's adruvam, according to Prahlad Maharaj, which means temporary. Adruva, dhruva means which is substantial, which sustains. It seems to be, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but it seems to be coming from the same verbal root as drif or dharma. Dharma is what sustains us, sustains our existence, or sustains anything. So adruvam, which is doesn't sustain, it doesn't last. So this body doesn't last, but it's artadam, it gives something meaningful. So similarly in this other verse from the 11th canto, anityam apiha dhira turnam yateta napatet anumritya yavan nirshaya shaya vishaya kalusarvata syat. This is one of those verses. If you listen to a lot of Prabhupada lectures, one thing you'll find is that there's one particular point that Prabhupada hammers on. I've been reading Chaitanya Bhagavat, and in the commentary, Jiva Goswami mentions one principle. You know these nyayas, there are different kinds of nyayas, Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, and different kinds, Shaka Chandra Nyaya, and so on. So these are logics or principles, you might say. So there's one principle, which I don't remember the Sanskrit, something about stana, I think, but the something stana nyaya, which means repeatedly pounding in the post. So if you want a post in the ground really solid, then you hammer it again and again and again. So Prabhupada would often, in his lectures, repeatedly, he comes back to this point, don't waste the human form of life. It is extremely valuable, extremely rare. Don't waste a moment. So these, he would quote Prahlad Maharaj and also this Avadhuta Brahmana, Labdas, Tudulabhamidam, Bahusambhavante. So it's Artadam. So we have a, when we talk about Dharma and Artha, the Artha that we want from our Dharma, of course, we want to go directly to liberation. Not exactly liberation. We want prema, but as a sub-category, a sub-accomplishment of our Dharma, our Krishna prema, as if we want liberation. Now, many years ago, you know, one of the first scholars who approached Srila Prabhupada, 26 Second Avenue in New York, actually he went there when Prabhupada wasn't there. At first he didn't meet Prabhupada, this Thomas Hopkins. So Professor Hopkins, he went to 26 Second Avenue because he was a scholar of religion. I don't know what his field is exactly. But he went to see the devotees at 26 Second Avenue. And he wasn't very impressed, actually. They didn't seem to know very much. And then later he met Srila Prabhupada and he says, oh, this is what's holding it all together. These people couldn't, I don't know what, how they're holding it together, but Prabhupada, this person is holding all together. So he was very fond of Srila Prabhupada and he appreciated what he had done by bringing Krishna consciousness to the West. So in a meeting with Srila Prabhupada in Philadelphia, Dr. Hopkins was trying to get Prabhupada to explain. He said, if we want to grab some quote from your book that kind of encapsulates what your message is, can you tell me something? So he asked repeatedly, kind of rephrasing this question in different ways. So finally, and Prabhupada said, oh, there are so many verses. So finally, at one point, Prabhupada said, okay. So he told the devotee, you find this verse. Dharmasya hyapavargyasya nartor tayopakalpate. Dharmasya antikasya, what is it? Boy, I'm forgetting, sorry. I'm forgetting about half of the slokas I used to know. So this verse is, of course, in the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the first line is very important. Dharmasya hyapavargyasya. That your dharma is not for artha, actually. Nartor tayopakalpate. The second line says, your dharma is not for artha. Your dharma is for apavarga. Dharmasya hyapavargyasya. Nartor tayopakalpate. Kama labhaya hismrita. And it's not for kama, which comes after artha. It's for our dharma goes straight to apavarga. It's not trivarga, or it goes straight, of course, to Krishna consciousness. So this is a revolutionary idea. Tadvag visargo janataga viplo. The Bhagavatam is revolutionary. Narada Muni is revolutionary. Whenever Narada Muni shows up in the Bhagavatam, he's always giving a straight line. We don't see him promoting sub-religious principles or preaching bridge philosophy. We also often talk about how to preach, especially in the West. How do you get people a step closer without giving them, you know, everything at once and overwhelming them? So get them a step closer. So Narada always seems to go right to the point. So Narada Muni, when he spoke to Vyasadeva, that's what he said. He said, you've been beating around the bush. Get to the point. The point is Krishna, Krishna Seva, devotional service, glorification of Krishna. That's the point. So this is what Prabhupada told this Professor Hopkins. This is the main point. The Dharma, our occupation, or our life. Of course, the following verse is, you shouldn't waste a moment in sense gratification in the human form of life. Prabhupada says in a purport in that section, maybe in that verse, Kamasya Nindriya Pritir. So he says there that the devotees are so overwhelmed with researching the absolute truth, they don't have time for Maya, basically. They don't have time for anything else. Just like now we have so many books to read. When I joined the movement, Prabhupada was just, the books were being produced. So we were reading them as they were coming out, which was really ecstatic, of course. Every time a new Bhagavatam would come out from Srila Prabhupada, everybody was, you know, fighting over it. So I remember just around the time I was coming to Krishna consciousness, the fourth canto was coming out. I remember getting the fourth canto, third volume, which has the Prithu Maharaj and the Kumaras. And I was so impressed by the teachings of the Kumaras to Prithu Maharaj. Such wonderful philosophy they're teaching. So this is Bhagavatam. It gets right to the point. So Prabhupada, that was his message. What was his masterpiece? What was his main life's work? To give the Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra. To give the Dharma that goes to Prema, not the Dharma that goes to Artha and Kama. So so the first thing mentioned here was this Artha, and then Kama. So I've touched on Kama a little bit. Prabhupada mentioned, and in other places it comes up, this Kama or sense gratification is especially allowable, you can say, for the Grihastha Ashram. Prabhupada would sometimes say the Grihastha Ashram is somewhat of a license for sense gratification. So the other ashrams, they're supposed to be austere. The Brahmachari, we can see how austere if we read in the 7th canto, beginning with chapter 12, after the Natringa pastimes. Then Narada Muni, because he's asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj, that's the whole context of the 7th canto, after the Rajasuya sacrifice, Yudhishthira Maharaj asks some questions, beginning with, how is it that Shishupal got liberation? He asks Narada Muni. So in any case, Narada Muni in the 12th chapter of the 7th canto, then he talks about Brahmacharya, then he talks about, I think, Grihastha, then Vanaprasa and Sannyas. So you can see, of course, even the Grihastha ashram there is quite austere, but especially the other ones. The Brahmacharya is completely sold out. He can't even eat if his spiritual master doesn't call him to eat. And the Vanaprasa, of course, you know, each of the ashrams is supposed to focus on a particular principle of Dharma. So the Brahmacharya is about education, Grihastha is about charity, and the Vanaprasa is about austerity, and Sannyas is renunciation. So when you read about the Vanaprasa, of course, they go out into the forest, which is by itself an extremely rare thing, an extremely difficult thing. And then you hear about what they have to eat, roots, and the Prabhupada even uses the term, the trunks of trees. When I hear that, the trunks of trees, just imagine eating the trunks of trees. So I guess there are some tasty trunks out there. But imagine how austere it is. You don't cook anything, you just take what's there. And then you dress in tree bark. And we were talking about this in Alachua, and one devotee looked out, he did some research on the internet, and he found that you can get natural fibers that are made of tree bark these days. Of course, they really beat them and they make them into a fine thread. But if you want to be a Pukka Vanaprastha, you can get some tree bark clothes and start a trend in ISKCON, I suppose. But it's very austere, we hear. No sense gratification. And what's what I find interesting, kind of, maybe, I don't think it's meant to be humorous, but when I read it, there's this list of all these austerities. Then it says, the basic principle is that one should not be too austere. One should not take on more than one can handle, basically, is the idea. And I read the list and I think, boy, all of that's out of my comfort zone for sure. So in any case, generally people want the artha for kama, for sense gratification. Now the other thing that's mentioned here, well, two other things. Yasha means reputation. So this is also connected to one's dharma traditionally. We know especially the kshatriyas, how they were so attached to yasha. Yasha means fame, it means reputation. So they were so concerned about their reputation, even the demons. Like Jarasandha, he was famous for his giving in charity. And he didn't want to lose that fame. He didn't want to be defamed. We often hear the kshatriyas, they're really worried. Oh, if I do this, I'm going to lose my fame. I'll be dishonored. That's another synonym. Honor, fame, reputation. And another way that Prabhupada translates it is glory or glories. So you see the idea how these are all kind of connected in meaning. Now this word yasha, it appears of course in the last verse of the Guru Vashtakam. Jayan stuvangs tasya yashas trisandhyam. Three times a day we're supposed to meditate on and offer prayers to the spiritual master and meditate on dhyayan, his yashaha. So Prabhupada there translates it as his glory. So we meditate on his glories. Now, of course, we also have the same word in Bengali, Ebe Yash Gushuk Tri Bhuvana. Ebe, it means, may his fame be glorified throughout the three worlds. Ebe Yash Gushuk Tri Bhuvana. So that's up to the disciples, of course, who broadcast his glory to make him famous, make the spiritual master famous throughout the three worlds. So we have a spiritual vision of that. And so the devotees automatically become famous, actually. Srila Prabhupada was certainly not searching for fame. He didn't want to be fame, unless that would bring fame to Krishna through him. But the devotee becomes famous because he's right there with Krishna. If you're some big person's right-hand person, private secretary, then you also get to be known. Who in ISKCON doesn't know who Hari Shori Prabhu is? Everyone knows who he is. Or Shruta Kirti Prabhu. Everyone knows because they were Prabhupada's secretaries. And of course, we hear about Prabhupada through them. So if you're Krishna's man, Krishna's woman, Krishna's devotee, then you become famous automatically. Then the last thing that's mentioned here is means of livelihood. Now devotees, of course, they know that from their dharma they will already be taken care of. They're not thinking that, of course this is connected with artha also, vritti. The word vritti means occupation, what something does. I often think of this word vritti. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pasyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, in his introduction to the Brahma Samhita, he says that the readers of this prayer, they should meditate on the meaning of this Brahma Samhita as a daily part of their sadhana, basically. So I think we can do that if we just concentrate and pay attention to the two verses that we hear every day at the greeting of the deities. So this one line, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. So manti means to possess, and vritti means the occupation or the function. So what this line says is that every sense possesses the function of every other sense in Krishna's body. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. Pasyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti. And of course, pasyanti means to see. He oversees everything, creation, maintenance, and annihilation. He can also do that with any of his senses. So anyway, this is a little meditation on this idea of the word vritti. So devotees are not concerned about vritti. Prabhupada also quoted this, saying, ajagara vritti, the occupation of the snake. He was walking in the nice park in Dallas, and early in the morning, and it was very nice, it was sunny. Prabhupada said, we're enjoying this nice park. The karmis have built it. They're rushing now to work to make money so they can build a park like this so we can come and enjoy it while they're driving at neck break speeds, as Prabhupada would say, going to work. So this is the occupation of the snake. The mouse makes a hole in the ground. The snake goes in, eats the mouse, lives comfortably within the hole. So the devotees, we are able to, our vritti is to serve Krishna, and by that, Krishna takes care of us. Everything is taken care of. So this is Bali Maharaj's point of view. He's not worried. And we'll see, of course. He's going to get rewarded infinitely. He's going to have the constant association of Lord Vamanadeva. So all of these things are going to be taken care of on a spiritual level, and he'll be fully satisfied. So he's, on that principle, he's agreeing, yes, I'm following dharma. With my dharma, I'm going to get everything you think I should get about a million times over, unlimitedly. I'll be satisfied. All right, I'll just read the translation, or the verse in translation. Shibaliru vacha satyam bhagavata proktam dharmo yam grihamedinam artam kamam yasho vrittim yo no na bhadheta karhichit. Bali Maharaj said, as you have already stated, the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame, and means of livelihood is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this religious principle is correct. So any questions or discussion? Panchagoda Prabhu?
Following dharma means some austerity is naturally there. And when you see the list of austerities, they're pretty austere. And it says that one should not take on more austerity than necessary. So can one justify in his mind that, you know, Mongol archery is too much austerity or coming to class? austerity. How do we judge how much is too much for us to follow? And if we're not following, how do we remedy that?
Well, our austerity is what Srila Prabhupada gave us. Four regulative principles, the program he gave us. That, of course, is an austerity because we don't want to do it. What is the definition of austerity? Anything you don't want to do, basically. So by definition, you can say sadhana bhakti is austere because in sadhana bhakti, until you get to higher raga nuga, in the earlier stages, there's no, at least not a lot, of spontaneity. You always have to push yourself a little bit. So sometimes it's said we should be easy on others and hard on ourselves. So we don't know what's going on in other people's minds, what kinds of challenges they have in their lives, and we leave it up to them, their relationship with Krishna. But still, of course, we have to say, well, this is what Prabhupada said. Some years ago, I was living in a temple where, actually, it was just around the time when things were transitioning from ashram life to more devotees living outside, and attendance at the morning program was kind of going downhill. So, and the temple president was really urging people, please come to Mangalarti, don't be in Maya, and so on. And he wanted me to speak about this, so I did research, and I, especially in Prabhupada's letters, over and over and over again, Prabhupada, especially when he gives initiation lectures, says, yes, I accept so-and-so as my disciple, and this person's name is such-and-such, and so on. Then he would tell the temple president, and make sure that they're following our program, following your regulative principles, rising early, attending Mangalarti, chanting their rounds, and so on. So Prabhupada, you know, he said this over and over and over again. So maybe sometimes devotees have to make adjustments, but for ourselves, we have to be careful. That's all. We have to be careful how lenient we are with ourselves. Now, devotees, I know, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, there's this phrase from one translation where Srila Prabhupada, in the translation, he says, what will repression accomplish? Sometimes devotees, they use that as justification, you know. Well, I can't repress my not, you know, wanting to sleep through Mangalarti. What will repression accomplish? So, of course, sometimes devotees take things out of context. Much of the context of Bhagavad Gita is about Varnashram and doing your duty within Varnashram. So the idea there is, you're a Kshatriya. You can't repress your Kshatriya nature and try to be a Brahmin. It's not going to work. That's what that's about. By the way, I'll just mention in the context of this, as an aside, devotees like to, whenever something doesn't go right, devotees like to quote this line, every endeavor is covered by some fault. But the context of that is also about Varnashram Dharma. He's telling Arjuna, don't think that you'll be a Brahmana because there's no faults in the Brahman. Brahmanas also have the fault. Sometimes animals are killed and sacrificed. It's not only Kshatriyas that have some faults in their Dharma. All of the different Varnas have some faults. So anyway, a little aside, that's the context. I suppose it is true, of course, that every endeavor is covered by some fault, but that's the context of that statement. So in any case, I think this is an overriding principle that for ourselves, and then of course this ties into the whole idea, well, how do you encourage people? Well, that a lot of it, I think, depends on relationship, the kind of relationship. The same thing applies in principle, and the same principle applies in preaching to anyone. We use this word preaching. We use it loosely in ISKCON. Generally, it has kind of a negative connotation. Preaching means almost like scolding, being real heavy with somebody. I don't know if the expression is still around, but in ISKCON, we used to have the expression, give the person the sauce. So that means get really heavy with the person, real hard on the person. So we think preaching. So you better preach to this devotee, get this person out of Maya, and what are you going to do? Just lay down the law, and the person's not going to hear anything because you're not giving it in the right way, or they don't feel the love, you might say. So a lot of encouragement has to do with our relationship with that person and whether we can help the person. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjana. We can apply the same principle. We accept what's favorable for helping that person, and if it's not going to help, then maybe someone else should talk to them, or someone who can do it in a better way than I can. And also where our perspection, our looking, should be more introspection, looking at our own faults and trying to improve ourselves. And of course, the outcome of improving ourselves is that we will be able to help others better. Prabhupada was able to help so many people because they felt the Krishna consciousness coming from him, and that was inspiring to them. So helping people ultimately means inspiring them to improve. So that takes maturity on our part, and that takes Krishna consciousness, obviously, our own practices. Yes, Dharam Prabhu?
Can we make the point that many of the Mangalarti coming from the body program actually it's not an austerity, it's a religious principle or freedom. We get free from all this woods of nature. So that helps us. Prabhupada has given very good.
Yeah. Well, it depends how you define austerity. Actually, the real word austerity means a lack. Sometimes in countries, when they're having a problem, they adopt austerity measures, they call them, which means, basically it means taxing people more and spending less because to pay off our debts. So they enact what they call austerity measures. It means you're going to have to tighten your belts a little bit, to use that phrase. You're going to have to spend less. So that's really the meaning. Austerity means to live more simply. That's really what austerity ultimately. Now we tend to think of, Prabhupada uses the phrase all the time, austerity and penance. That's another thing, because we don't have an English word really for tyaga. Or maybe tyaga means to give up, to renounce. But penance really means prayaschitta, actually. It really means you're making up for something, some bad thing you did. You did something bad, now you have to do something good. Or you have to perform some hardship to make up for the thing. So penance means like paying a fine. That's the idea. So in any case, so we can talk about austerity. Now, as you say, well, it's not austerity. Well, it is, because if I don't want to do it, then it's an austerity. But it's also, in a sense, if you want to say that austerity means something material, no, it's not something material. It's not like the yogi's austerity or the tapasvis. We know that the tapasvi, they perform austerities, and they have to guard against having a hard heart. Just like even the prachetas, when they woke up, and they saw that the trees were everywhere, they were angry because they'd been doing this really heavy austerity for 10,000 years under the water. And apparently their hearts were a little hard. So they just started burning everything down out of their anger. So that's the result of austerity that's maybe not focused on Krishna. So of course they had some guidance, and you know these things are sometimes mixed. But that lesson is there from that story we hear in the Bhagavatam. But yes, I mean, your point is taken that this purifies us, so in one sense it's not austerity in that kind of sense that the tapasvis undertake.
For the new people, new devotees, it is an austerity, but once we go through this whole process for some years, it becomes very negative.
Yes.
Some of the devotees, is it austerity? It's austerity, but so nice.
Well, that's the principle. In the beginning it's hard, and then things improve. Actually, there's a saying in English, beginnings are hardest. So generally that's true. You start something and it's really hard to get going. The inertia is there. So in our spiritual lives, there's a lot of inertia built up. The weight of our material lives, our karma is there. So to get going, it might be hard. Often people say, I had this experience when I first went to the temple, and I saw how the devotees lived, and I thought, wow, this is... And I went to a military school, so I was used to some austerity. I went to U.S. Air Force Academy, so I was used to some regimen. I wasn't just some hippie getting smoking dope and living how I wanted to. I was used to some... But still, I looked at the devotees' lives, and I thought, boy, this looks really hard. That's what I thought. But I was so convinced by the philosophy, I said, well, I have to try it. I'm still trying. So it does appear that way. And even people, you know, you have someone, some friend maybe will spend the night with you, and you get up so early, and to them it's just imaginable. Get up at 3 o'clock, or some always get up at 2 o'clock or 2:30 in the morning. And they, what? That's usually when I go to bed. It's like an upside down to them. So yes, it seems that way. And of course, we first come to Krishna consciousness. Yeah, we're changing our lives, so it's difficult. But as we practice, yeah, it should be, it should, if we're doing it in the right way, according to Prabhupada's guidance, then the taste increases over time. And it becomes more tasty, more delectable practice of Krishna consciousness. So?
This one,
yes. Yeah.
We want to do service for devotees, for service for the ladies, for service for the holy place, So, by just seeing that we are humble servants, so that itself gives us a lot of, it becomes very light, devotion becomes very easy to perform by just being a, just trying to be a humble devotee.
Yes.
So, the people who can do it, right, they are physically fit and they can do all these things. But what about those devotees who cannot do it?
Well, there are so many things we can. We have to look. Krishna, one thing we have to understand is that it's not up to us, it's up to Krishna. It's up to Radha. Radha gives the service, she doles it out. It's not that I can decide whether to get service. Now, I can make a decision, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. We have to get. Service is, well, I was talking about artha dham. What is desirable? What is meaningful? What is valuable? There's nothing more valuable than devotional service. So the devotees are praying, I just want that. Well, that's what we're doing. We're chanting the Maha Mantra. Give me some service. So if we're not getting... Actually, I made this point when the temple president asked me to preach about the morning program. I was making the point that now if your life is not so complicated and you're not doing these things that Prabhupada suggested, then maybe Krishna's going to say, all right, I'm going to make your life complicated, and then you'll have a real excuse. You won't be able to do it. But we all have some opportunity in our lives. If we don't, then maybe we should make some major decisions in our lives. Sometimes, you know, we even say to people say, oh, I'm living out away from everywhere, and it's so hard. So sometimes you say, well, maybe you should decide to live closer to devotees. Maybe you have to make a major change in your life, move close to a temple, and then you'll be able to serve. So you might have to make that hard decision in your life if you want the opportunity to serve Krishna. So that's also there. And the other thing is, there are so many ways to serve Krishna. I always like to encourage devotees, just take one thing and commit to it. Because if you commit to it, this is also the idea of austerity. We become purified by the austerity of doing something all the time, because sometimes we don't want to do it. But if we're committed to it, then we do it. We just do it whether we feel like it or not. So that's one of the values of commitment. Just take on something. Even if it's emptying one trash can a day, whatever it is, just do it every single day. And Krishna will give you more opportunity. That's the principle also. Do this service nicely, just like in a corporation. You do this peon service, maybe we'll put you up the next level. People are always trying to climb the corporate ladder. So we are also, we're trying to climb the corporate bhakti lata. We're trying to climb the devotional creeper, get closer and closer to Krishna's lotus feet. So he'll give us more opportunity the more we take advantage of the opportunities that we're given. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.